This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 270 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
This episode is part of our episode discussions of Outlander season 4. Can you believe we're here, Sam?
I mean, it was going to happen eventually.
I mean, we hoped. We did hope.
I mean, I knew it was going to happen last week. Or do you mean like from the beginning of when we started podcasting? Did I know then that we'd be discussing episode 401?
No, I didn't even think about back to the beginning. But dude, you could take any question back that far and the answer would be no. The New Yorker is an iconic magazine that represents the best writing in America today. Beyond publishing the best writers in the world, they hold people in power accountable through their rigorous reporting and compelling storytelling.
The New Yorker writes beautifully on subjects that readers may not have previously put much thought into, but end up finding themselves fascinated and delighted by, sometimes reading tens of thousands of words on topics like the world's diminishing supply of sand and hunting down heirloom beans.
The last thing I remember reading in The New Yorker was Emily Nussbaum's article about Netflix's adaptation of Shirley Jones's The Haunting of Hill House. And it was really, really interesting. The article was Netflix's soul-dead version of The Haunting of Hill House. And I was like, whoa, because I rather liked it, though I've never read the novel. And the subtitle is the adaptation of Shirley Jackson's funny, nasty psychological thriller abandons the pungent feminine anxiety that made the book so original. So yeah, that is quite a read. I urge you to read that. That is one of the reasons I like The New Yorker, because they have such a variety of topics. You'll find politics, news, international affairs, climate change, information about the environment, popular culture and arts, science and technology, business, fiction, poetry, food, humor, and cartoons. Literally anything you can think of covered by a normal or any other news source, it'll be here. But with a very unique New Yorker adaptation of it.
And like I said, The New Yorker gets you interested in topics you never knew you'd find interesting, like paper jams, fault lines, and stink bugs. Get the best writing anywhere, everywhere, with home delivery of the print edition each week, on the go with the New Yorker Today app or via Google News, or the digital version of the magazine available on your iPad, iPhone, Nook, or Kindle. You can get the best writing anywhere, everywhere.
NewYorker.com publishes 15 to 20 news stories each day that aren't available in the print magazine. The complete online archive features every issue of the print magazine since 1925.
So don't wait. Go to NewYorker.com/Outlander. Listeners of the Outlander podcast will save 50% when they enter code Outlander. With this special offer, you'll receive 12 issues for just $6, plus get the exclusive New Yorker tote bag.
You can choose between print, digital, or a combo. That's print and digital subscription. Subscribe to The New Yorker and read something that means something. That's 12 issues for $6 and a free tote bag when you go to NewYorker.com/Outlander. Okay, this is going to be a humdinger of a humdinger of a humdinger discussion. Summer and I haven't discussed this yet. We're doing it now just for you. There may be strong feelings about at least one thing. I'm very excited to hear what Summer has to say. So, Summer, do you remember what you did? I know you normally introduce the read-along. Do you introduce the episodes too?
I feel like we should have researched this before we started tonight.
I could leave this
part
in. That's
funny. I feel like we had a whole year to remember what we do. But so what I can do instead is say, and now, time to our episode discussion. This week, we will be discussing episode 401, entitled America the Beautiful.
The writers were Matthew B. Roberts and Tony Graffia. Now, before we get to the episode, this is going to be a little bit of a staggered discussion here. What does that tell you? Now, no, the first time I watched it, I didn't care who the writers were, but I didn't even care. I was just like, let's get to the meat. But on reflection and watching it second and third time, if I had been more patient to see, okay, who are the writers? It can, by now, by season four, this should tell us something. Number one, that there are two of the writers that are still with us on the show. Not deceased, but on the show with us. Did that mean anything to you, Sam?
Not necessarily.
Matt is known as a book lover and book reader. So what this means to me is that we have someone who loves the books and tries to get in as much as possible, like lines and stuff like that, from Matt. And then Tony brought us The Devil's Mark, brought us Faith. So Tony is going to bring some kind of drama and maybe some tears. So this combination tells me whether it ends up being true or not, that's to be seen. When I see Matt, I think, okay, he's going to do his best to keep book readers satisfied, you know, as much as makes sense for the purposes of adaptation, number one. And then Tony, I think, oh gosh, I might be crying this episode. So that's what it meant to me. So opening credits are a little bit down the lane. We start with a very unique opening, or maybe not so unique. I wrote, unidentifiable people around piles of stones setting fires. Did they look? Could you recognize who they were?
I just assumed that they were like druidic, like, but it was 2000 BC. So yeah. They're not going to be something that is identifiable by you or me, because there was not even recorded history in 2000 BC.
So it doesn't even have to be in Scotland or England or present day Celtic countries. It could be.
Well, now it did not look like Craignadune. So it did not look like.
Those were like.
It was on a flat. So yeah. But it was also. Well, the thing is that the thing that I took away from that was they were still building on that spot. So at any time, they could have switched them out, you know what I mean? If they had a stone thing go down, they'd have been like, oh, upgrade and put in a new stone, you know what I mean? So that part to me didn't bother me, but I was just stating that the land and the area where they were building it didn't look like Craignadune. It didn't have the hill. It was just kind of, it looked like a flat expanse.
So that, with the people and the stones and the fires, I wrote, that looks like a recipe that's only missing Galus. The music starts up beautifully with the Dance of the Druids theme. So, you know, it's got some kind of, it's definitely relevant to our story in some fashion. It's supposed to be meaningful to us in some way. The fires they're setting are at each of the piles of stones. It's a full moon. We don't get a lot of close-ups of the people, but they seem to be dressed in animal hides, and their hair reminds me of like the Rubbles from the Flintstones. They're quite, talk about Claire hair. They got some like Claire hair on fire or something.
Dirty Claire hair.
Dirty Claire hair.
Like Claire hair with dreads in it.
They're maybe trying to dance. It looks like some are trying to like get like, they're like shaking their groove thing, but in a not so hot way.
Okay. I thought you said it looks like summer trying to do something. And I was like, you don't get to compare my dancing ability to the druids dancing around the stone.
I don't even know your dancing ability.
That's my point.
Some are trying to dance. It's like I said, it's like they're trying to shake their groove thing in a not so hot way. Then, of course, as always, as most time, we get Claire's voiceover. Quote, for centuries, humans have held an endless fascination with circles, attributing meaning where they are found, from the eternal rotation of the planets around the sun to the movement of clock hands to a simple wedding band. And I, more than most, know full well just how a circle can affect one's life or death. First time I heard it, I was like, oh, that's really sweet. Or, you know, I think of stones. I think of the time travel. I think of all the things. I don't, even when she says wedding band, I don't think of that, even though I read the book. But, oh, daddy, they brought things home this episode.
I felt like from the beginning, from the first scene, they were beating us over the head with the wedding ring thing.
Are you kidding?
And as a book, oh, yeah. And as a book reader, I know why. But it felt like
a bit much.
it was just like foreshadowing of the foreshadowing for foreshadowing of the foreshadowing. Like it was just.
I didn't see that.
There was a lot of it. Like every time that a ring was mentioned, I was like, oh, here we go.
See, I didn't see. Well, of course, second watch, I got it. But the first watch, I didn't. I noticed they said wedding ring. I noticed they meant she mentioned it in her VO. But I didn't think like wedding ring, ring of stones, fire. I mean, I didn't connect all that at the first time I heard it. So I know others don't have a problem with it. But normally I do. This is Ginger, not Summer. I'm going to give us permission this season, or maybe myself permission, and therefore Summer, to go out of sequence if it serves a conversation. Now, we're still going to discuss the episode chronologically. So we're not going
to
go.
Oh my God, I'm holding you to that. If you interrupt me and tell me we're not there yet, ever, I am going to, I don't know what I'm going to do, but you're going to be upset and in trouble.
Hold on. I didn't finish my statement. We will still discuss the episode chronologically. I am not changing our standard. However, like with this VO at the opening, there's so much to get to, right? As soon as we hear that, and especially if you've watched it once. So what I mean by not holding ourselves, or specifically myself, to like strict, right? I'm not giving us a runaway relief for the read-along. Because that's different. But for the time someone, book reader or no, but the time someone listens to this discussion of an episode, hopefully they watch the episode, right? So if they watch the episode, I understand similarly with the read-along, they probably read the chapter. But my point is, there are so many things that connect. And like you were saying, there's foreshadowing. So I think I don't know if I'm going to attempt to do it or just allow it to kind of happen and we'll see how it goes. When I take notes, I still take notes in the order of the show, right? Like I don't go back and forth. However, after I watched it once or twice and then I start at the top to take notes, as you said, you see something and it triggers like, oh my gosh, I know now what that's referring to, you know, like a half an hour later. I'm not going to wait a half an hour to tell you what just triggered. You know what I mean? So I will bring it up as soon as I think about it as I'm taking notes. That's what I mean by kind of out of sequence. I will not require myself nor yourself to stop ourselves if we make a connection to something that is later on. You know what I mean?
We'll see how you do.
I agree. We'll see. But that's my intent. So the opening. After watching it once or twice, the words, Claire's words, finally make sense at the end. Geesh. Yeah. So Summer saw that coming a mile away. I did not. Okay, so I'll say again, it's not ever a guarantee, but when I saw that Matt was one of the writers, I thought, oh my gosh, we may have a great thing coming as far as, you know, book readers might be extra happy. And I was very happy with what I, all the stuff that I saw. A whole bunch of stuff was included in this episode. It started with, just like in the book, it started with the hanging of Gavin Hayes. The reason was different, but I mean, who cares?
I went back to the book and I tried to find the reason that he died in the book and I couldn't find it.
He was a Jean Valjean. I believe he stole food.
Okay. Because it did say it was better than starving to death, but...
Yeah, he stole food.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah.
The banjo feel of the season, I'm still going to accept it, to be honest. I don't hate the banjo, but after the absolute gorgeousness of seasons 1, 2, 3, it is very different. It is very different. What do you think about the banjo?
I like it, but I like bluegrass, so maybe you're asking the wrong person.
Nah, not the wrong person. I'm asking the right person.
Well, if you wanted me to agree with you, you asked the wrong person.
Why does me asking your opinion want you to agree with me? I want to know your opinion. Summer, you're my co-host, nobody else. Regardless of what kind of music you like, although that obviously influences your answer, but you have spent time in the South. You've lived in Georgia. You've spent time in North Carolina. You know what these hills look like, and you know much better than I the sound of the place. So I think it's a very valid and valuable opinion. So I don't want you to agree with me. If you agree with me, that's fine, but I don't want you to when I ask you a question. I am curious. So I'm having a hard time. I don't think it's ugly or anything. It's just, I'm going to use this word a few times this episode. It is kind of, not jarring, but it's going to take a little time for me to get used to it, especially in the opening.
See, now it just made me think that I need to invest in a banjolele.
They exist?
Uh-huh.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, technically, I could just get a banjo because there are only four chords, too. Mm-hmm. But I think the tuning is different. But Just saying. I was moderately inspired, but I think that I would have to drop like $600 to $1,000 if I wanted a banjolele. Wow.
Speaking of not banjolele, but speaking of Outlander and music, we have data our hands on that piano reduction, girl.
See, you say reduction and I'm thinking cooking, and I've never tried to reduce a piano in a pan.
It's a score reduced for piano and guitar and that kind of thing, and chords and all that. If it's like any other score that's reduced, it's got chords you can play on the guitar and the piano accompaniment of some of the basic piano accompaniment. Accompanying what? Other than the song, there's like, it's all instrumental, I think. But anyway, we need to get it. We're like, not just as fans, but as freaking musicians. Come on, girl. So when Jamie goes to give a final drink to Gavin, also new, not in the book, he/we meet Stephen Bonnet for the first time. He is someone, like in the book, who is going to be hanged as well. He's a condemned man. Jamie tries to tell Gavin, hey, I'll do this. We'll create a diversion, you know, a stramash, she calls it. And then you run. And guess who hears this, of course? Bonnet hears this. Really quick. Well, I don't care that the reason for Gavin's hanging has changed from the book. I don't care. I admit I laughed when he said, quote, I should have listened to you, McDoo. I shouldn't have lain with that woman, unquote. Huh? What did you think about that change, Sam?
Like I said, I couldn't remember what had happened, but it wasn't just that he slept with a lady. He murdered her husband.
Oh, no. Exactly. But what he said was, I shouldn't have listened to you, McDoo. I shouldn't have lain with that woman. Like,
Did you notice, though, because, you know, he offers him rum.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have whiskey. And then Stephen Bonnet pipes up and he's like, well, how about some for me, too? And the look on Gavin's face, I couldn't tell if he was nervous or scared of Bonnet or if he was just nervous because he's dying. I didn't know how to read that facial expression. But
I'll have to look at it next time because I didn't notice. But that's very curious. So here during this conversation, Bear is back. Thank you, thank you, thank you. For now, the banjo seems to only be in the opening and then when they're moving, you know, like out and about, not during serious conversations. Similarly, I don't think of the banjo as an instrument that could accompany a very serious conversation.
Come on, come on. Faith 2.0 will be played on the banjo.
Oh my gosh, bite your tongue right now. Then, well, as Summer said, Stephen Bonnet inserts himself into their conversation. How about a drop for my soul as well?
He does that a lot.
Dude has long hair. I got to say, I approve. What's the actor's name again? Ed Sheeran. Not Ed Sheeran.
Spieler.
Isn't
it Spieler?
Yeah, I think so. Ed Spieler. I don't think I've never found him unattractive. Don't get me wrong.
I found him unattractive because of the character he played in Downton Abbey.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, what about his character here?
See, I think that you're just going to fall back into Tobias with long hair. I don't care what he does.
Oh, my gosh.
So I think this is your Ed Spieler's got long hair, so I don't care what he does.
Oh, my gosh. Girl, you're going to be like, I don't even know, by the end of this episode, by the end of our chat, you're going to be like, oh, Ginger, I can't. Okay. So Jamie.
Oh, I think I know where this is going.
Jamie meets up with his other buddy from Edinburgh, Leslie, and Fergus. He tells them, change of plans. Don't do anything when they release Hayes. He wants it this way. He's going to go to his death. Then it's time for a hanging. I don't know why I sang that, but there you go.
Sang no one ever.
I know, right? We finally see Jamie, Claire, Fergus, and Marsley. I'll try. If it comes out differently, it comes out, but I will make a concerted effort together. Claire's VO tells us it's been 4 months since they'd arrived in the colonies, making their way up the coast when Gavin killed a man. Sounds like a Queen song, doesn't it? Gavin, I killed a man. Something like that. Another difference. They weren't hanging all the people at once. In the book, if I remember correctly, it was like a line of nooses. Is that right? Or am I making this up?
I didn't remember there being multiples at once.
I thought it was multiple, but it's not important to go look up. Maybe I made it up.
I mean, it's the first chapter. I'm sure I can find it.
It's really okay. In the episode, there is one noose. And Claire, she can't watch. It's too much. Jamie is a mensch and does as Gavin asks and is there for him at the end. And of course, his death is before he is hanged. There are drums. So this season begins with drums. Remember this. And of course, the book it's modeled after, adapted from, is called Drums of Autumn. The soldier calls out next, and Gavin's friend. So after Gavin is hanged, they're saying, okay, bring up the next dude, the next person. And Gavin's friend, Leslie, is like, no, it's not fair. You're taking from me. He's like, he runs forward. And then one of the condemned makes a run for it. Then there really is a skirmish. Bonnet sees his chance and takes it. He runs away.
He's going to say it was a little late for his skirmish.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, if he didn't do it in an early enough fashion that it actually helped anyone, all he did was
let someone get away. Yeah.
Right. All he did was, you know, add to, or he played a part in his own death. Let's put it that way.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my gosh. You're right. I didn't think about that. Now we finally get to the opening credits. So I know we already had a Facebook Live in our Facebook group, in our Facebook community, which is there if you guys want to go watch it anytime. We went in depth and talked about our feelings and guesses of things, as well as the viewers' feelings and guesses of things. We still don't know all the answers because, of course, it's just episode one. But as a really quick rehash, not of our feelings, but of things that we see in the opening. And tell me, Summer, if I'm wrong, if I get something wrong, or if I miss something. So this is, to the best of my ability, the order of things that we see. Claire or some woman is getting water or washing at the river. Then we see the cabin. We hear the banjo big time. We see the indigenous people dancing. I believe they're dancing. And then Claire, I think, or someone, is putting a man's hands together. A black man, so probably a slave, in repose, and I believe he's dead. And then there's Highland dancing. Casey will be in love with this. And then someone's getting a bath. Someone's about to touch a stone. I see long fingers, and I thought maybe it's possibly Claire, but it couldn't be. She's not that stupid. My heart breaks with joy in what is to come. I can't talk about it yet.
His
I know
his heart
this.
Break with joy? That's yeah. not a thing.
Well, apparently
your heart doesn't break with joy. It fills with joy.
No, because I get tear bricks at joy too, and that's kind of heartbreaking. Okay, so I believe it's Bree because of her chin. It looks like Sophie's chin. So I eventually get used to, I already said this kind of, but I can eventually get used to the banjo for the theme, as well as Rhea singing to a banjo.
I think you're going to have to.
I know, right? But I can't.
I don't think you're going to have a choice.
I can't marry the sight and sound of the druids from episode 101 dancing and turning to a banjoed theme. That part is not working in my head. The rest of it I can adapt to.
I think you'll get used to it. I'm sure it's jarring the first time.
Oh, that's first 13 times.
But no one ever enjoys their first time.
Oh, Lord. What is the thing where people are putting their hands together? Is that Jamie and Claire? It looked like a wad of money, but it just could be a hanky.
I didn't look at the opening as much as you did.
Okay. I did it very slowly.
Not going to answer that.
We see River Run. Someone has a picture or drawing of, it looks like a female and looks like it's Bree in their hand. And they're also writing in a notebook, but I don't remember that at all. I have no idea. It looks like the person has red hair, so it has to be Bree or Jamie, but I don't know who that is. I don't know, but it's someone also writing in a small book. And then there's a woman coming down the stairs, dressed finely, pearls on her wrist. Now, is that meant to be Bree? Because Claire said straight up in this episode about the pearls.
Oh my God, Ginger, I just watched the title card.
Okay.
Don't ask me questions.
Okay. So then the red coats along a river and we're done. Finally.
Oh, thank God.
So of course.
So the title card
is a bald eagle diving into a river. Of course, with the title, America the Beautiful.
See, now do you know how I interpreted that?
America pissing on you?
No. It just, given the juxtaposition of the ending, so that we know how it ends, I am venturing that the eagle represents America, and we're going to call the fish that gets caught and eaten the Frasers. Point being, they're going to be eaten alive
By the colonies, yeah. America pisses on you.
Well, I guess.
I'm not saying.
The bald eagles don't generally piss on you.
No, I know it's true. But bald eagles, America, girlfriend.
Yeah. Brooklinen is the fastest growing bedding brand in the world, with over 20,000 five-star reviews. Brooklinen sheets, they feel incredible. Like I'm staying at a fancy hotel.
Founded in early 2014 by a husband and wife team, Vicky and Rich Fullup and their dog Dukes, their mission? To bring five-star hotel quality sheets to everyday life. That's luxury sheets without the luxury markup. Most bedding is marked up as much as 300%.
And what I love about these sheets is that they come in coordinating colors and patterns. So whatever you currently have as your setup for your bedroom, I guarantee you there's a sheet set on their site that will coordinate with it.
Summer's right. I have or had kind of a mix mash of things from kind of not really a coordinated bed setting, bedroom scheme, if you will. But with Brooklinen, I chose all white. Every piece I got for Brooklinen was all white because it went with anything that I had.
My Brooklinen sheets are the best, most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. Brooklinen.com is giving an exclusive offer just for our listeners. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code Outlander at Brooklinen.com.
Brooklinen is so sure you'll love your new sheets that they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code Outlander at brooklinen.com. That's brooklinen.com. Promo code Outlander.
Brooklinen. These really are the best sheets ever.
Okay, so after the title, opening title and the title card, the episode continues. So they're in a pub post-hanging, as you do. And their next plan, well, in 3 weeks, they plan to sail home to Scotland. So it's funny how this wasn't ever the plan in the books. Am I wrong?
It was the plan in the book. But remember, it had to change when they lost all their money. Well, not all of them were there. He was definitely sending Ian back. And Fergus was there with him. So he wasn't going to send Fergus back because Fergus didn't have anything without him. And Marsley was still in Jamaica because Correct. She was
pregnant.
Prego. I think that the plan was for Ian to go back.
Correct.
But they had to change the plan after the money was stolen.
Correct. Well, yes and no. So when they made the plan to send Ian back, and Ian's like, please, no, no. If they hadn't booked it yet, they already knew like the date and ship and everything. And then something happened. I have to go back and read that Ian was like, no, 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 please. I want to stay with you and all this adventure, all that. Ian did something. I don't know what he did, but Ian...
Oh, he told them after the boat was already gone.
Yes, correct.
He's like, oh, that boat set sail, blah, blah, blah. And then he was like, the next one isn't till May or
months
whenever.
Away. Exactly. So I don't think it was ever their plan. It was their plan to get Ian back.
Well, I thought that given the end of the last book, the book previous, when they were like, we're in America, we're home, they were always planning to kind of stay. But the decision was fully made in the course of this episode.
Oh, heck yeah. I was just trying to say, in the book, they never had a plan to go back to Scotland. They did always have a plan to send Ian back. In the series, the only part of that they kept was to send Ian back. Everything else was that they were all going to go back, apparently. So that's it. That is a change. It ended up not changing, obviously, because we need them in the mayor. We need them to stay in the colonies to have through season six.
Well,
or it doesn't work.
They were all on the fence. So it wasn't for sure that they were all going to stay. So I think it was not a definite that they would all go. But I think they were definitely on the fence.
Before they meet with Tryon, it wasn't on the fence. They said, we have the name of a ship. It sails in 3 weeks. We have time to go see Jocasta and come back and go back. Lord John used his influence. He removed my thing. Remember after their meeting with Tryon, when, yes, they do begin to think about staying, he's like, look, I can go back. I can buy a printing press. I mean, you know what I'm saying? So before meeting with Tryon, I think that's what they were planning. I don't think they were considering staying at all. That's just what I understood. But I understand we all see things in our own way. So yeah, so the plan definitely, and this is the same from the book, is to go visit his Aunt Jocasta at a plantation of River Run. And then Fergus appears. So they're still in the pub. They want to bury Gavin in hallowed ground, but the minister is charging a ton and they don't have it. So they'll wait till dark and bury him illegally. As you do. So straight from the book. We could bury him in the wood. Nah, Hayes was afraid of being in the woods. He was mortally scared of spirits. A few years back, he'd encountered a tanach, and they don't go into what that is, which is fine, but they go into not only into detail what that is in the book, they like tell his whole story, like the whole, it's a pretty long experience. Oh, yeah. But I remember that. I'm like, oh, damn, they really kept that. I appreciate that, Matt or Tony, whoever threw that in there. That was awesome. I can't wait for Mandy of Great Scott Blog to explain the Gaelic of this episode. Until then, Tannic is, as they said, is a type of spirit. And Gavin, his experience, it was before Culloden. It was quite the freaky tale. So I urge you guys, even if you aren't book readers, to go read that because it was very interesting. So I can't wait to see what Mandy and our friend Agav have to say about this, about that. So when they drink there at the pub, all I can say or see is, you have my goblet. It's just like the pewter one I bought during All Souls Con in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Oh, what was the restaurant called? Was it the City Tavern?
The City Tavern.
Oh my gosh, you guys, if you're ever in Philadelphia, go. It is fantastic. The history there is amazing. The food is ridiculously good. Oh my gosh. And get a pewter goblet thing.
If you order Ben Franklin's chicken dinner, it comes with a free glass of wine.
Oh my gosh. And actually, yeah, you don't even have to buy a goblet if you don't want to. They bring you water in goblets. And it, oh man, that thing is so cold. It was like that made my year. I mean, I love drinking out of it now just because. So Marsley excuses herself. She says she's very tired. Yeah, right. I mean, I know we're book readers, so we already knew she was knocked up, but as soon as she said very tired, I'm like, okay, yeah, they're going to keep it. Did you think that too?
Duh.
So,
I mean, here's the thing. You can change circumstances, but you can't write children out because they come up later.
Oh my goodness. And he's like one of the most important ones. He's amazing. He's amazing. We won't say anything more about, oh, I just gave away his gender or his sex, whatever. Whatever. It's a dude. It's a boy. Is it? It might be a girl. Okay. So in the book, she does get pregnant. She gets pregnant in Jamaica when they're still there. And she stays behind with the family there to have the baby. Fergus goes on with Jamie and Claire. But then later, once they get to the ridge, he leaves them to collect her. And he returns with le petit bébé. This is really not a huge change, really, since we learn later in the episode that they won't be accompanying them over the next few weeks. So it's tied up really nicely here. It all works. Now, I had a question or seven about this Kaddish. A Kaddish is a Jewish hymn of praise. In this instance, it's a lament for their dead friend. But they did it in Gaelic. So I don't quite understand how it worked out. I would expect someone like Jamie maybe to know what a Kaddish is, but like, I don't know what to say. I appreciate their use of Gaelic. I appreciate the time it took them to learn it. But unlike the book where it was touching that they got the rest of the pub to sing in with them, this one, not because of what it was, but it wasn't for me. I couldn't wait for it to stop.
Well, it did go on, and it was a group of people in a tavern, which means that it was not completely tonal. And sometimes it sounded like they were trying to harmonize, and sometimes they were succeeding, and sometimes they were not.
Yeah, and I recognized a few words, so I knew it was Gaelic, obviously. They're not going to start breaking out in Hebrew. I heard Mac so-and-so, Mac so-and-so, which means son of, son of, son of. So it's like a litany, I guess. Like, how did Leslie, of all people, know what a Kaddish was? I'm just, maybe they're more worldly than I thought, but I didn't think until their journey to Jamaica that they knew much about the world outside of Scotland. You know what I mean? It was just a surprise. In the book, which again, no shade throwing, in the book, it just was so seamless because they had the same circumstance. They wanted to sing a lament for their friend. And it was still in Gaelic, but it wasn't, I mean, at least it wasn't called a Kaddish. I don't know. It was just interesting. Did you think anytime they showed young Ian in profile, oh my gosh, he looked like Bonnet, or Bonnet looked like him? Oh my gosh, I did. When I look at Bonnet, I don't see young Ian. When I look at young Ian, I don't see Bonnet, like, straight on. But when he's in profile or three-quarter profile, oh my gosh. He is, wow. He looks, with the long hair and pulled back, I'm like, holy dudes. And also, didn't it look like young Ian's hair was darker?
It did look darker in the back, yeah.
God, I'm not the only one to, I'm not making that up. Or at least we're making it up together. So they were off to Barry Gavin, according to Claire's VO, and the forest they were driving through or riding through was absolutely gorgeous. Quote, the only way the rest of us would make it back was to sell a gemstone we salvaged from the wreck of the Artemis. Unquote. She goes straight into Lillington. I didn't know they'd already discussed this. I forget in the book if it's before the Bonnet issue.
Well, they rescheduled a bunch of things because...
I like that. They rescheduled.
Because Ian has Rollo before they leave with Gavin. And they bury Gavin before they do anything else. So they would not have... Because you didn't just talk about them burying Gavin, right?
No, not yet.
So you're saying that
I mentioned that they're on their way to.
Okay.
But they're in the wagon right now.
All right. I thought you were saying they went to Lillington to the dinner before they buried Gavin. And I was like, no.
No, they're talking about Lillington already while riding in the wagon.
Yeah. And what sucks about that is that the arsehole is riding in the back the whole time. He knows all of the states of their purse.
Ah. Now, this is actually, I don't know about Lillington. The Lillington part, I think, is not in the book as far as this moment. Yeah, I like that. I'm going to use that. The Lillington discussion was rescheduled. However, a discussion of gems was not rescheduled because in the book, that's how What's-His-Name knows to go after them. They talked about the gems in the book as well with What's-His-Nuts in the back. Just, I don't think they mentioned Lillington. They mentioned or talked about the gems, but they did not mention Lillington, I don't believe, because Lillington was something that they discussed, like, once in the daylight, making plans, blah, blah, blah. So, yes, Summer is right. Remember who's in the wagon listening to all of this gem talk. Okay. Jamie and young Ian go to dig a grave for Gavin. Now, this gives them some alone time. And for us, a chance to see the PTSD Ian has from his time with Galus.
Which he did not have in the books.
He had a conversation similar to this. I don't know if it was at the graveside or not, but not this visceral reaction, no.
No.
I think it's, number one, very true, very possible, very realistic.
I thought it definitely fleshed Ian out in ways that he is not fleshed out in the books. So I'm not saying that it shouldn't have happened here. I thought it was a strange choice to have that discussion in a graveyard, that burying a grave in and of itself would be the thing that triggered him. So I thought, at first I was like, really? But I think that the conversation itself was good. I thought it was a good choice to have him discuss those feelings, because Book Ian is pretty, he just kind of seems like keep on trucking. You know what I mean? He's not really, like, I'm not saying he wasn't affected by what went down with Galus, but he, as far as the book states, he doesn't appear to be that put off by it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And this is one thing that's going to be hard. And I don't even want to, I won't even allude to it, I promise. But just as in when we do our read-alongs, I don't want to get ahead chapters in case people are going with us chapter by chapter. Even though we've finished the read-along, and we hope a lot of listeners to the read-along accompany us through our discussions of the TV show. Of course, we want you guys here. But even though we've all done that together, we are not going to speculate even. First of all, we haven't seen all the episodes, so that's not going to even up for discussion. But we don't even want to speculate about how they're setting something up for the end of the season, because there are show watchers who don't read the books, and we don't want to spoil anything that will pretty much promise you be in this season. So, and that's just normal for us. I just had to say it because, oh, Summer's so right. But yeah, so it was very nice. It was nicely done. I think it was important. It definitely fleshes him out more at this point in the story. In the books, he is fleshed out, but it takes more time. And I think it's actually in further books that he's more fleshed. It might even be, seriously, like book 7. I mean, it's like a lot later that he's truly, truly fleshed out. And we always love reading about Ian. But anyway, so yeah, it's a very important moment that it's being shown. And this is what he is dealing with this season. Now, I'm not saying what happens to him. I'm saying this is his emotional load this season. This sets Ian up very nicely, I think. The loss of his family, the loss of his will over his own body, and the loss of control. Ian tells Jamie more of what happened with Galus, how she to briefly discuss it or to briefly run it down. How she wanted Chase Boys, but since he wasn't, she used him. And of course, Jamie is the one who can help him the most here. First, having been through rape and torture, and second, being a dude. He tells him that he needs to talk about it. And once he shared with Claire, it got easier. And I said, and then I wrote, yep, right here. Ian's hair is definitely darker right here.
It's also real dark.
Oh, like, man. Real dark. Like, a lot of these scenes were super dark and hard to see.
Super dark. Oh, I had like the brightest setting on my device too. It was still dark. This is what something Ian said, quote, "She needed someone chaste for her purposes," unquote. Of course, meaning Galus. Now, what were these purposes? Well, we actually never learn for sure because this is going back a book, back a season. This is not a spoiler. But knowing Galus and knowing everything she did or her aim in all things, she wanted to get back to the 60s or at least back to the future. So the point or the aim at what she supposedly needed these chaste virgin boys for was something to do with time travel, of course. Then Ian says to Jamie, "Have you ever lain with someone when you didn't want to?" Jamie says,
"Clearly."
"Yeah." And I say,
"But different.
Let's count the ways. Let's count the way." Oh, totally different. But let's count the ways. So BJR, actually, probably only two. There's BJR and Geneva. But with Geneva, it was a no, then a yes, yes. With BJR, it was always no. I love John Bell, but I can't wait for Ian to grow up, to be less jokey and more adult. It's very sad what he goes through, but I can't wait to see what John Bell brings to him. Jamie closes the conversation with, "Your cock doesn't have a conscience, but you have." Yep, pretty much.
I think that after watching that scene, all grave diggers should have to hug before they move on. That should finish every grave digging, like dig, dig, dig. We're done. Let's hug. Hug it out. All right, let's go get the body.
So they go to get the body and something moves under the linen, under the blanket.
He stands up like Charlie Brown in his Halloween costume.
Dude, and I mean, I would freak out too. And the only word I make out that I think Leslie says is Ifrin, one of my favorite words, Gaelic words. Of course, it means hell, I think. Jamie stabs at it or hits at it with his hoe or his shovel, whatever he has. And the guy falls down. And of course, it's
Who was
Bonnet.
Surprised?
Remember what we said? Bonnet heard their entire conversation.
Like, literally, I don't think there could be a worse person to overhear this conversation.
No. So this is something that we will revisit again and again this season. Jamie's question, his first question, quote, "How long were you in the wagon?"
Mm-hmm.
Unquote. See?
Yes, he told them that. But he also very honestly told them that he was a thief and a smuggler and a pirate.
Uh-huh.
Those three things add up to I'm not helping you. And in fact, I may have to kill you because of what you know now.
So yes, Bonnet's answer tells us everything. Jamie doesn't heed it, nor does Claire, and that's all we can really say for now. So as Summer said, Bonnet admits he's a thief, smuggler, pirate, and that he's killed people. Though he says, it wasn't anyone who wasn't trying to kill me first.
Lies!
And Jamie then releases him. But Bonnet goes a step further. He goes, look, there's some soldiers coming up and they'll be hard to, you know, they want to hang me. So it's hard to get by. So if you could just help me get past them, then you'll be free of the taint of my company.
You're right. You're right, Bonnet. Let me help you, an admitted pirate, thief, and smuggler, get back to your gang of pirates, thieves, and smugglers so you can regroup knowing that I'm carrying all of this cash money and jewelry on me. Please, let me help you. Bad choices made by characters in this show, man. Bad choices.
And then he says, quote, I won't bother you again. You have my word.
Uh-huh.
Quote, uh-huh.
The word of a smuggler.
Claire does not look happy. And then he plays the one card that could get Jamie to take him. He asks that they help him in the name of a friend, Gavin Hayes.
Which I think is a stretch because I don't think they knew each other.
No, of course not. I don't think so either. He knew of him, like he was in the same jail cell, but I don't think they were friendly. So they decide to bury Hayes and then leave Leslie and Ian to take the horses and to return to the tavern. Only having Jamie and Claire take the wagon forward with Bonnet, they will be less suspicious as a husband and wife on a wagon. So remember in the book, it's Duncan Innes and Fergus who were with them. And they walked alongside the wagon. So they actually didn't return to town. They were alongside. Ian may have.
Well, they had to send Ian back to town to get the dog since they didn't let him get him in the beginning.
Then Bonnet does a nice move.
Is there such thing as a nice move?
Well, hold on. Nice isn't he's offering to help, but a move because of how he's couching it. He says, allow me to help bury a friend. Mm.
Is that a quotation marks, friend? Because we all know you didn't know him.
So now they show the moon again. It's a not so full moon. Then they're back in the wagon. And of course, the wagon is stopped by the soldiers. One of them sticks his bayonet into the corpse and to make sure it's dead. And he says, have a look, Griswold. I don't know why that made me laugh, but it does.
Because that's the name from the vacation movies.
Oh, Lord, that too. Yes. And then I wrote, hello, bear. So the music that is just under this scene is beautiful. It's very, it's not soft. It's not me. It's not hugely loud, but it's very gentle, I guess. It's beautifully dissonant. It's beautiful dissonance, which then resolves as after they stab him and nothing happens. But of course, it kind of freaks you out like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen now? I must say, mad respect for Bonnet. Could you have stayed quiet if someone stabbed you? I don't think I could have.
Well, to be fair, they didn't stab him.
Well, it's true. It was mostly through the
venison haunch.
Then let's drop off the load. Claire doctors his wound. And Summer already mentioned this. As she does, Bonnet, sees her two rings. And he asks her about them. She says that she's been married twice. And note the way, yes, he looks at her rings, but he's also checking her out.
I'm just going to call him a trash panda because he is officially the raccoon of the season. And raccoon sounded too nice.
Huh. So she says she's been married twice. And I wrote, he's a charmer. Yes, but also, Lord have mercy. He says, you never parted from the ring of the first. Meeting her first husband. Bonnet gets personal. He says he's never been married, but has always been partial to rings. Uh-huh. Now, something about the notion of an infinite circle that fascinates me. Now, these were his words, reminiscent of Claire's words at the top of the episode. She reminds him that, well, the hangman's noose is also one, so you better, think about it. And at this point, he gets a good look at her. I'm thinking a little too much. And then he gets even more specific. He says of his fears, gray waters, dark with mud, things swimming in it, waiting for the sea to have her way with me. Quote, it's the sea herself pulling at me. Have you ever felt the sea pulling at you? Unquote. I'm surprised that we don't even get a hint of Faith's theme here. When Claire
Why would
answers.
We? Because Faith was not the sea. Was that what they played when she was drowning?
Yes.
I haven't watched since a year ago. I'm not surprised they didn't put that there because I don't need that right now.
but, you don't want to soften anything with Bonnet.
No. But it's like, he keeps saying, the sea's going to have its way with me. I have these bad dreams with the sea, but the sea keeps calling me. So, and he keeps going. So he's just trying to constantly cheat death to prove that he's not going to die, which feels like he's like the original adrenaline junkie.
Hmm.
I think he would definitely skydive and bungee jump if those were options.
Oh, gosh. Jamie assures Bonnet that they won't be seeking any reward for their assistance.
I wonder if that was his initial, if you come with me, I can, my friends will pay you.
His attempt?
Yeah.
At getting,
I wonder if that was his first, if you want to. I'm happy to pay you guys back for helping me out if you come meet me and my 12 guy friends.
Doesn't he say it can be arranged?
Yeah.
Oh, very smart. I think you might be right. Bonnet leaves him with a warning, though. So even after he says I'm a thief, I'm a pirate, and a what? And a killer? Smuggler. So all four things. Even after all of that, and even after, if they think hard, they know that he knows that they have all the gems, and of course he's ogled her rings. So even after all of that, he gives them the icing on the cake that is, I'm a big effing bad dude, you don't want anything to do with me. And that icing is, quote, I might advise you to be wary. Travelers in these woods, they're often set upon by thieves and outlaws, unquote. So while,
and me and my friends
and me, exactly. So while the attack did not happen in the woods, he knows their plan. I think they talked about Jocasta. I mean, he knows where they're going and what they have. So he gives them a warning. Basically, look, yes, he mentions these woods, but he's like, look, yo, be careful out there. That's right. That's it.
And what is their response? Their response is, well, let's set up tent in the middle of the woods and get half naked.
Uh-huh.
Can we talk about their half naked state? Because they pitched a tent or a half tent, like a lean to-y thing, in the middle of the forest. He's down to basically his pants, and she's taken off all of her clothes with the exception of that nightgowny thing. So she's down to that. He's down to just his pants. And then they get it on in the woods. And then all of a sudden, it's the next day and they're all clothed again. So did they just get naked enough to do it and then put all their clothes back on and go to sleep?
Okay, so this is interesting. Summer jumps to post-boning and Ginger goes back to talk about the boning.
The boning, because you're more interested in the boning.
I just, again, I don't mind that we go out of order to talk about highlights. I mean, we have. It's going to happen. But then once that's done, I'm going to go back to where I left off.
Well, my point is this dude just said you're not safe
exactly.
in the forest. Right. So let's pitch a tent in the forest and get naked and be completely at the mercy of not only the elements and the bugs, but also whatever roaming thieves happen to come upon us in the middle of the night while we're half naked and boning each other.
Yeah, it's completely safe. What are you talking about? And before they say goodbye to Bonnet, Claire has to add, quote, I hope your good luck continues, Mr. Bonnet. Really, Claire?
No, you don't.
Well, she sealed their deal. And then Bonnet says, he thinks a man most often makes his own luck.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So they're camping in the woods and they get it on. And it starts with basically Jamie Boobborn. I mean, his pecs are bigger than hers. But first, their dialogue. They're happy to be alive, blah, blah, blah. Then you get this line from the book, and it made me so happy. Quote, can't you see how small a thing death is between us? After you left me after Culloden, I was dead. And all that time, I loved you. Unquote. I mean, that's Diana. Nothing else. It's beautiful, Diana.
Well, wasn't that whole chapter called The Laws of Thermodynamics, the first rule of thermodynamics? And they totally reference that.
Completely. And then more, as Summer said, he says, when my body dies, my soul will still be yours. Nothing is lost, Sassenach, only changed. And she says, that's the first law of thermodynamics. And he says, that's faith. And all over this, their love theme is all over this. And they show, once she climbs on top of him, you see her right side. It is Jamie's ring that you see the entire time. Now, the next morning, she's dressed and has flat Claire hair. I mean, her hair close up looks like a hot mess. It was quite funny. I was like, dang. And then they have more talk about America. They look out over this beautiful vista, and she talks about the Mississippi River, the Great Plains, the start of America, and how it will eventually reach the Pacific Ocean, and how it will be 50 states, but not filled with Scots. It'll have many other people. She talks about the American dream, And this is setting us up oh so nicely for the final scene of episode one. And yes, I mean this episode. Talking about, and you know, this goes back to the eagle, right? Scooping up the fish. Mm-hmm. This waxing on and on, rather romantically, rather beautifully, about the start of America and how it's what it's going to be and what the American dream is. Although she keeps it real, she talks about, you know, the indigenous people are not, you know, are not treated well. They're killed. They're run, forced to move to reservations. She mentions the not so pretty parts too. Here there is beautiful music. There's beautiful music. I hear a clarinet here. And I'm wondering, is it a new theme? Are we finally getting, unless I'm forgetting something before, I wonder if their talk about the America to come, Breeze America, is the introduction of Breeze theme. Did we already have a Breeze theme?
You're asking the wrong person.
I don't know for sure. I'm sure we will be, you know, corrected. I will be corrected if I'm wrong. And if there is one, then obviously I need to learn it. But I know we have a lot of themes. We have a Willie's theme, a Lord John theme, a Jamie and Claire theme, a Faith theme. I'm not sure that we have a Breeze theme. But the reason that I think it would make sense is, number one, it's beautiful. Number two, it comes right under this conversation as they talk about the coming America. And they mention Breeze America. And it would be so fitting because it had a touch of the clarinet. And the clarinet, of course, is Frank's theme. And even though she's not biologically his, Bree carries Frank, love of Frank, in her.
Are you crying?
No.
Okay. It sounded like you were choking up.
So it would be just very fantastic if this is a new theme and it happens to be Bree's theme, because it's America, Bree's America, with a hint or a definite bit of clarinet, which to me would be Frank's influence. And I think it would just be so beautiful. So the clarinet is all over here. So it's not a hint, excuse me. It is so pretty, but it's also very sad. I find it very sad. And then as I said, she talks about how the indigenous are treated so dreadfully. And then they're back in town. Jamie is going to sell a ruby, hopefully to get a buyer, at this dinner at Lillington's. So he has the ruby mounted for a necklace for Claire to wear. Governor Tryon will be there, and Baron Penslaw, a German who just happens to love jewels. So I had a question about the dinner. Was that dude sitting across from Claire Philip Wiley, the dandy?
I don't know. I could look up on IMDb.
Because he did not have, unless it was just very, very, very understated, he did not have a beauty mark, a fake one. He was supposed to be a dandy. I could see him as a dandy. And he was, I don't know if he was quite leering, but he had his sister with him, just like in the book. So that's what made me think, because I don't remember hearing his name. I don't remember him being introduced as anything.
He wasn't introduced. They just had the one dude look at her necklace. And what struck me about that is I was like, that was really an awkward exchange to have him look at the necklace the way that it went down. But it was not the awkward way that it was supposed to be awkward in the books. Because in the books, he was like literally trying to climb down her dress to look at it. And so that's why she took it off. But in this, it was more just awkward. Yeah.
Wiley's sister then says, "How charming your hair."
It says Chris O'Donnell played Philip Wiley. And Judith Wiley was played by Ainsley Jordan.
Hopefully, if Wiley, I mean, obviously he's part of this dinner party, but hopefully I can't say anything without giving some away. Okay. Let's just say I hope it's Wiley. And I hope they stick with Wiley. People are shocked that Jamie is the nephew of the widow of River Run. And like, look, he can have rich family, even though he's not. Don't step off. This is the first we hear her described, Jocasta, as, or at all, quote, "a most charming woman," unquote. Governor Tryon says that he and his wife had stayed at River Run for a few nights even. So Jamie lets out that they plan on returning to Scotland once they have visited his aunt. Again, interesting change. So this then, who knows what would have happened if he hadn't announced that? Because this triggers, at least visual before our eyes, triggers Tryon to tell him, let's have a private chat after dinner.
You might want to rethink that decision, sir.
I don't know, but I have something to say. So afterwards, after dinner, they meet. Tryon hints at a land grant, of course, with strings. But we don't get a lot of detail yet. Then we do hear, quote, there is the law and then there is what's done, unquote. So, yes, he'll have to swear an oath, but he's already done this. Then Jaime goes to bed and he promises he'll consider the offer. And he's chatting with Claire as they get ready for bed. He says that, well, we sold the ruby for 100 pounds, so that's good. So now we've got some gems and some money. Plenty of money to pay for their passage to Scotland. And he makes plans, or at least makes thinking out loud about maybe even buying a printing press once they get to Scotland.
Yeah. Yeah, he totally sounds like me when I buy a lottery ticket.
I'm going to do this. And I
Exactly.
Jaime got a lot. Yeah,
there first you go. The first thing I'm going to do when I collect my lottery winnings.
Then he shares that Lord John, this is where the information is introduced to us in the show. Then he shares that Lord John had used his influence to withdraw the warrant that was out for Jamie's arrest. So they can safely return to Edinburgh. By the way, Claire is thinking about the offer, though. What are the strings? The governor is a soldier and recognizes the value of other soldiers, and he sees Jaime as one. Jaime shares more. He's had trouble with the governor had had trouble with the regulators in the past year. These are men from the wilderness who have taken offense at what they believe is illegal behavior by Tryon's tax collectors. These men, the regulators, took matters into their own hands, called meetings, drew up petitions to stir up the spirit of resistance. So Tryon wants an experienced soldier for the cost of a few acres of King's Land. Claire's like, okay, let's keep perspective now. She reminds him that there is a revolution coming. And dude, we cannot be on the wrong side of history twice.
I know.
Did you laugh at that line? I was like Claire was exasperated.
No, I didn't laugh, but I mean, it was true. Because she's like, I don't think I can handle being on the wrong side of history one more time.
She's like, look, I may have to go back through the stones because I can't do this.
To be honest, they were on the right side of history. They were just on the losing side of history. So I don't know if that correct term would have been the one that I would have said. I'm sure she meant right, meaning the winning side, but or losing side.
Then we get the Bree bit. So, okay, I was wrong earlier when I said that I still think, and I hope at least, that music we heard with a clarinet, I'm hoping that's Bree's theme. They don't bring up Bree until this conversation here about it being Bree's America. It's her country. Quote, if there's a bit to make, this is Jaime speaking, if there's a bit to make this a good land for Brianna, if my presence here can be felt by her later, then that would be something, unquote. Now, it's hard to pick out, but there's a little bit of clarinet in the music right here. It's not the same melody. It's not the same music at all, but there's a little bit of clarinet in what's being played, but nothing as dramatic as and blatant as before. Then we get the next day, we meet Rollo. So happy. I can't even express myself.
Can't believe they made us wait so long. I mean, I'm sure I think they needed to make it just the two of them, or else they were never going to get frisky on the road. And, you know, got to get them getting frisky. But, I mean, they had Rollo from like the first chapter. So I was like, maybe we're not going to get Rollo in the first episode at all, but I was pleasantly surprised.
So young Ian, now I don't know if this is explained in the book. If it is, I am completely dense. I will own it. But here, I think it's awesome that young Ian says that he was playing dice and that's how he won him. And so he named him Rollo because of rolling dice. Is that from the book? Because I remember everything like that's from the book, but I didn't know the genesis of his name was that. Because now I feel dumb. Diana may have done it, but it was not explained.
Correct.
Okay. So I'm not that stupid. At least not in this incident. I'm not dumb for not remembering something that wasn't in the book. Okay. So again, Ian's hair looks darker here. I keep noticing it. It's in the tavern when they go have a meal that they announce they're staying in America, but they're sending Ian home. And Ian is not in love with this idea at all. And Jamie says, this chapter, I believe, or something of this discussion happens in a chapter in the book, I believe, titled Man of Worth. And it's possible that I'm misremembering a title from a different book or an earlier book. But there is a chapter in one of her books called Man of Worth. But yes, he says, look, your parents and me too, we all want you to amount to something. We want you to be a man of worth. We want you to be educated. And so, you know, go back and spend time with your family and all of this. And he tells them, quote, your life's not meant to be wasted, unquote. Now, dear listeners of our read-along, you'll recognize this line or an echo of it from the end of the book or near the end. And that's all I'm going to say. But that's
because we just read it last week.
I know, right? But the thing that I'm referring to happened like 2 weeks ago. But if you think about it, you'll recognize an echo of that line. So this is Jamie telling Ian.
And enjoy the foreshadowing.
Your life's not meant to be wasted. So they'll think about where they'll settle when they visit River Run. Jamie portions out the profit from the ruby, enough for Fergus and Marsley to return to Scotland, and some for the alimony promised to Leary, and some for Leslie too. But Leslie says that, I'll travel with y'all for a bit longer.
Chapter 8 is entitled Man of Worth, and that was when they were on the boat with Myers.
I'm sad.
And I think it's when he's getting his like Gaelic lessons. And he's in Latin lessons and he's trying to teach him how to. And he's like, no, you need to take. He's like, I don't need these lessons. I want to be like one of the indigenous people. I want to run around and catch things and shoot a bow and arrow. And I want to kill a skunk because they're the most ferocious animals in the whole United States. And he's like, no, you're going to do all of these because, you know, your life is meant to mean something. So
they basically have that conversation a little bit earlier.
They do. a little bit later.
Well, no, in the show a little earlier.
Yes.
So then we learn about the new bebé officially. They are going to be staying in Wilmington and she'll get work as a seamstress and Fergus will also look for a job. They're going to stay put because it's more comfortable than traveling up the who knows where as you get more and more further along in a pregnancy. Leslie and Ian are also going to go to River Run since they still have 2 weeks until their ship leaves. So at this point, Leslie is going to be on the ship with Ian. That's the plan. So fast forward, we're on the riverboat. Jamie tells Claire.
So, yeah. Question. Mm-hmm. Because like I just stated, on the riverboat, mm-hmm. Myers is there.
Yes. So I'm so sad we're not going to have balls.
Do we think that he's gone completely, that they've just written him out? Or is he going to show up later?
Okay, well, let's think about this. And I can delete it if I have to. So the reason, what is the reason for Myers, other than having a friendly dude who's in contact with people?
Well, Myers gets them the boat and he guides them up the river to River Run, first of all, because they didn't know how to get there. And then he does a bunch of other things. I mean, he comes up again and again.
I know, but what is there some, okay, them, obviously, they got a boat without him and they're getting to River Run without him. So he's not needed for that because there are other ways to find out because everyone has heard of, everyone in the area knows about River Run. That's not a very hidden thing. But what is a function where they need him? Like absolutely need him or someone to do the thing. They obviously didn't need someone to do the riverboat and didn't need someone to do the getting the boat or getting them there. Okay, so they did away with him for that, or we don't need him for that. So forget the ball surgery. We're not going to get the ball surgery.
What if we do though?
Think ahead. So he's the one who takes them and to the right?
Yes.
So if he's not used for that, okay, let's take a step even further back. Do we need a he's already had bad blood with we don't need to let is having an to be and then get it. You know what I mean? Does that really change the story, or am I completely forgetting something?
I don't know. I think that they have decided that he's not necessary. However, the loss of Leslie at the end of the episode, I'm not sure. It's an opening for either a Myers character or, I mean, the Captain Freeman could just take them up by himself. He didn't die, but I don't know. We'll see.
Okay, so Leslie and Ian, blah, 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 blah. On the riverboat, Jamie tells Claire about Jocasta. We find out that, or she finds out that she's been married 3 times and all to Camerons. And all the Camerons were related, I think. Now, after the rising, Hector, her final husband, and Jocasta had fled to North Carolina. They were granted land, and Hector, of course, they built it up. They have a ton of slaves. They have this really fine plantation. And Hector had died about a year before this conversation takes place. Now, the man who is the rower, I don't know what to call him, the rower.
The pole.
Euclides?
Yeah,
Eutrocles, I think. But yeah, the pole dude. He's a freeman. And then we also, when the camera kind of pans back, there's a gorgeous shot of the boat on the river. Oh my gosh. Like that is, it's so gorgeous. And that sunset is some of the most beautiful stuff that they've shot. So Ian is feeding Rollo and they're docked for the night. Jamie gives Claire a medicine box.
I don't think they're docked right then.
Because he says it's your turn at the pole.
Which struck me as funny because that's not something you say to somebody today. Nowadays, we're trying to keep our kids off the pole, not put them on the pole.
So Jamie gives Claire a medicine box. Now, I wonder, it doesn't matter. This part doesn't matter. They could link it, but whatever. I think they're going to keep it. I hope they keep it. So they kept the medicine box, which is amazing. And of course, the microscope, all the little jars, all that. But they haven't mentioned, probably because she hasn't found it yet. Maybe it's not there. Well, yeah, exactly. We don't know it's Dr. Rawlings yet.
And it honestly might not end up being important. She is a surgeon and a skilled doctor.
Yeah, but Dr. Rawlings, they tie that into something else too later on.
They might not be necessary.
But then as they do this, you hear their theme all over the place. And Jamie says he found the box when he went to the goldsmith to get the ruby set. Now, more talk about being a man of worth. Him being a man of worth. He wants to deck her out in laces and jewels. And she's like, you have given me so much more. Brianna, for one. And we learn that Claire, at this point is when we learn that Claire had given. No, did we know as viewers that Claire gave her the pearls before she left?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Well, if we didn't, now we do. And she says to him about the ring he gave her. This ring is all I need. And what's the occasion? It's their 24th anniversary. How sweet. And then nightfall.
And of course, this was the next mention of the rings where I'm like, okay, all right. You've just made the rings the most important thing in this episode the third time.
I want to talk about this in two ways.
I only want to talk about it once because it's getting late.
Well, no. I don't want to talk about it twice. I want to talk about it in two ways. Okay. So when I first watched it, it was with sound, music, everything. Just like watch it like a normal viewer. When I went to take notes, I purposely turned the sound off because the sound, the music, the accompaniment, whatever, the song choice was with what was happening was so freaking jarring to me. I had trouble concentrating. I could see what was happening. You know, it was bright enough, but I had a hard time like digesting it. It was so jarring. There was such cognitive dissonance. And I know that freak's sake, it was on purpose. It was 100% on purpose to freak you out and to mess you up, I think, to really mess you up. And it was very successful. But when I took notes, I had to turn the music off because I needed to see what happened. And so the first time, and I do want to hear about your thoughts about it. I want to hear your thoughts about the music. But for the purpose of let's get through what happened, let me butt in, tell me I'm wrong, tell me what you think. This is still a conversation, but I first want to talk about the things we see, not hear. Is that okay?
Sure. Though I would like to say that I started to tune in to the live feed on Facebook at the premiere, not knowing that they were going to be discussing the episode. No, I knew they were going to be showing the episode, but they started discussing the episode. And of course, they start talking about the last thing they saw. So he immediately talks about the ring thing, but the using the different ring. And then he talked about whose idea it was to use the America the Beautiful. So, I mean, it was like, so I knew a lot of things going into this that were not shocking to me.
Okay. So tell me, we can't talk about the ring thing, right? Because it spoils.
It spoils what? Everyone saw the episode.
No, it spoils why the change or not change in a ring thing is important or not.
Okay.
Not the stealing of it, but the stealing of which ring. That's a spoiler if we talk about why it was changed. Okay, so my question is, I'm asking you because I purposely didn't watch anything. Whose idea was the music?
I think it was Matt Roberts. Which is polarizing. I've talked to a few people about it, people who were at the premiere, and their opinions on it it was a very polarizing choice. And
I want to hear about it. I want to hear what you say. I'll tell you what I think, which may shock you. It may truly freaking shock you or others. People may be unhappy with me, but I want to hear all of it. And when we do our live, oh my gosh, I want to hear from everyone. Okay. So, but first, to take that away, I just wanted to talk about the stuff that happened. And for me, at least, I can't speak for you. For me, it was very, again, on purpose, craptastically on purpose. It was on purpose. They wanted to not distract you, but to make it difficult to concentrate, I think. It was supposed to be jarring. Okay. So this final sequence, a lot to unpack. Okay. So first, as I said, let's chat about what happened. Only the visual. So Leslie is sleeping on a bench, it looks like. Jamie and Claire are sleeping on the floor on some furs. Young Ian is also on some sort of bench or something, and Rollo is down on the floor in front of him. Rollo jumps up first. The next thing we see is outside. Rollo is tangling whatever with someone, and they fall into the water together. And that's the last we see of Rollo in this episode. Ian wakes up hearing the bark and the splash and notices Rollo is gone. Bonnet walks into their quarters.
Does he walk in or does he saunter in? He like...
Oh my God, he swaggers. He swaggers.
He catwalked in there. Like, that was like model walk.
He was... Thank you. Yes. Every time he does it, he didn't run anywhere. He wasn't fast at anything purposefully. He was very determined. Not even determined. Yes, that too. But he was very deliberate and slow. Agree. And there are so many things I'm going to say that people are probably not going to like me for. But anyway, Bonnet enters, definitely saunters, and he says something, which we don't hear, but it doesn't matter. And I wrote down, you got to admit, he's got swagger. Oh my gosh. So I wrote in caps. This is where people are probably not going to like me, or you may not like this. I wrote in caps. No,
I never liked you.
I wrote in caps. I love it. I am totally down
gross.
With Bonnet. Not the nastiness.
Gross.
Not the nastiness, but his... So Claire is immediately afraid, understandably. This guy knows their secrets. He was ogling her rings. Like, she's like, oh, we did a bad thing. We did a bad thing by letting him go. As soon as he hits Jamie, it is completely, completely, completely a distraction device. He punches Jamie and turns around and runs outside, and Jamie follows him. Duh. Of course Jamie follows him. Bonnet's henchmen then go inside while he's distracted Jamie from the rest of the party.
Oh, yeah. You got to separate him.
Exactly. And they hold him there. His men go in there and hold them at gunpoint. Leslie pulls Claire back inside because she's wanting to go after Jamie. Leslie is hit. Young Ian is hit. So they're both down. So the dude, Jamie, is being beaten up on deck. And they take his cash at this point. They start getting into their things.
They don't talk about it in the show, but in the book, he's carrying all of the jewels and money and stuff like in his crotch.
Oh, I didn't remember that. Oh,
like
gosh.
He's carrying them all in a place that only the ladies of the night might find him.
Oh, I didn't remember that. Oh my gosh. I doubt they did that in the show. Maybe I'm wrong, but
well
see.
They did have to dig around.
Oh gosh. Well, okay.
In his pants.
Oh, fun. Oh Lord. So inside, they are starting to, the dude is starting to dig into things. Now in the book, this guy is inside. Claire and Jamie are actually outside and inside one of the guy, and they're holding him. And one of the guys goes inside and breaks open her medicine chest and starts taking the bottles out and like looking at him and throwing them down and breaking them. And she's like, don't just get out of that box. You know, there's important stuff in there. And Jamie's like, oh my God, Sasnak, stop, you know, stop. But here she's inside. And I believe he starts to rifle through her medicine box. But of course, he does it. It's not as big of a thing as it is in the book, but he's just making a mess. They're looking for stuff, anything of worth. Young Ian then stands up. We see a shot of the captain and his freemen being held on the shore at gunpoint. So that's why they're not here. Young Ian is then forced outside or onto the deck. And then a man enters with a gun pointed at Claire. She puts her hands up. Now, just in the book, their faces are covered by like bandanas, all but bonnets. Outside, again, Jamie's gems are found. So their gems are found. Now, when the guy puts his gun down back inside, Claire goes to slap him and he starts to bend her arm back. And at this point, Leslie gets up to help her. He pulls the guy off her, rams him and bashes his head against the wall, and then that guy's down. And he goes back to help Claire, and just as he does, Bonnet comes back in, and just without a blink of an eye, slits his throat. Now, that's definitely not in the book.
There's at least a blink. He grabs him, makes eye contact with Claire, and then slits his throat.
Yeah, but my point is with no compunction. He does it like... There's no compunction there. So the calm, okay, this is where, holy Lord, I mean, okay. The calm, cool, and collected nature of Bonnet is what is freaking amazing about the acting, about the character, about his rendition. The actor is spot on, in my opinion, thus far. No drama. He's very calm, experienced, cool, and calculated. So much like BJR in that. And Claire is, of course, freaked out. Now, I have to admit, tell me if you thought this, because I thought, okay, I'm going to tell you what I thought, because this freaked me out big time. I was like, oh my God, they can't do this. And they didn't, but I thought this was going to happen. So I have to admit, when he started walking toward her, he grabs his waistband or belt and like jiggles it a little bit. And she shakes her head like, no. I was thinking, oh my gosh, they're going to have him rape her. And that...
Oh my God. I think what he did was worse. I think that him digging around in her mouth for that ring was way more of a rape than any of her previous rape attempts.
I disagree. I think it was disgusting what he did. Don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying at the time where he put his hand to his, and I watched it twice to take notes, and I'm like, or the scene twice.
Of course you did, because it was your favorite.
Well, Summer, stop it. No, I wanted to make sure. Am I making this up? But no, his hand goes to his, not to his crotch, but it goes to his waist or his belt, and he like jiggles it. And I'm like, and then she's shaking her head. No, back and forth. And I'm like, okay, there's something understood there or implied that I'm either getting or completely making up, but it looks like he's trying to, I don't know. I thought, oh my gosh, if they have him rape her, that to me would be an unforgivable change. Needless, but oh my gosh, but it didn't happen. So we're good. Of course he wants her rings. She takes them off and swallows them. Now, so much of this is directly from the book, and it's amazing and spooky and so effective.
Well, if you remember, in the books, though, he didn't want the rings for himself. His compatriot buddy was trying to steal them, and he's like, he's not going to take no for an answer. You have to give me the rings.
So Bonnet chokes her, and this is another similarity and direct recall of BJR. Bonnet puts his finger in Claire's mouth to dig it out. It's very similar to BJR
Nasty.
And Jenny. Oh my gosh. So similar. Disgusting. And yes, definitely a rape of a kind. She spits one out and it's Jamie's ring, not Frank's, as in the book. So we legit cannot talk about anything more on this topic. But that had to come out. I can't say anything more about the ring. Okay. Then Bonnet leaves her and his men leave Jamie. We will hopefully see what happened to Ian and Rollo in the next episode, because that's where it ends. Well, that's where it ends for them. So Claire spits out Frank's ring. She is devastated, in shock, in despair. And oh my gosh, that is how the episode ends. Before we get to the music, the things that all the stuff that I just blabbed about, all the facts or the facts as best as I can see them, the happenings in the scene, in the sequence. Do you have anything you want to talk about? Opinions, disagreements, agreements, anything of any more comments you want to make before we go on to the music thing?
Bonnet's an and they should have killed him.
Oh, dude. I mean. Now about the music. No, I'm not going to rehash the whole scene with the music, but I do want to talk about the use of that music.
Okay, so I just rewatched that scene that you're talking about. He's not grabbing at his crotch. He's straightening his pants by holding on his belt. I think he was putting his knife away.
Okay, I wondered about that because he just slit the throat. Okay. She still looks freaked out and shakes her head, so that's why I thought...
Because he's saying, give me the rings. And she's like, no. And that's when he screams in her face, give me the rings. Told you I'm obsessed with shiny things.
Oh, man, he's mad. He's so good. He's so good at freaking me out. Oh, my gosh. He's brilliant. He really is great. So far, a great Bonnet. And Bonnet makes an entrance, people. He makes a freaking entrance a few times. Okay. So in general.
He's like scary Captain Jack Sparrow.
Pretty much. Scary, scary sexy. Oh, my gosh. So, okay, use of the music.
Well, it was jarring, and it was supposed to be jarring, I think. But also, I think that it was, the attempt was the juxtaposition of the American dream against the reality of the immigrants in America and the promise of the beautiful things that everyone has and wants when they come to the United States is juxtaposed against them getting their ass handed to them and all of their worldly belongings stolen. So, I mean, it's... I think that that's the reason they did it. And I didn't have a problem with it being a silent scene where you couldn't hear the dialogue. I thought it was like it's a resurgence of the old day of silent movies. I didn't need words. I knew exactly what was happening. And not just because I was a book reader, but I could tell by what was by the actions that everyone did. And none of them were overdone. They weren't like, you know, big pointing like you will give me that and I'm going to do this and now I'm going to hit you. Like none of it was overdone at all. I thought it was played very realistically and honestly, but the words and the dialogue weren't necessary to get across what was going on. I do think that it was a very polarizing choice to pick that song from that era to back that up. And most of the people who I've talked to disliked it a lot, like a lot, a lot, a lot.
Did anyone bring up the fact that it wasn't just the song and the era, but that the singer was an African-American?
No, the words that were used to me is that they thought it was too much of a political statement, which I didn't see that at all. Mm. But it was that they were making a more of a political statement than was necessary. But I didn't really, for me, it wasn't about politics. As I, like I said, I saw it being as more the juxtaposition of the dream and the reality of the American dream, or at least their American dream. They really do have the worst luck. They should never get on boats ever.
Oh my gosh. So this is, okay. So watching something like that happen is jarring enough. With the music, So
it added to the confusion.
Exactly.
That you were feeling trying to understand what was happening.
And I, as Summer said, we're book readers. And I was still watching it going like, wait, I know what's coming, but I can't follow. What's going on? It was so jarring that I was like, I can't. I was so thrown for a loop that I had a very difficult time concentrating. I thought it was very jarring. It took it as soon as it started or as soon as I realized what it was and who it was or what it was sounding like. Summer, it took me out of the scene.
Yeah. No, that's the other thing I heard was that the other person I talked to did not echo the political feel, but she said that it took her out of the scene and she
hated
it.
Well, I didn't hate it, though, but it definitely took me out of the scene. It was hard to watch what was going on. It's hard enough to watch what's going on, right? But it was hard to follow. Now, when I saw the gems, I was like, oh, my gosh. And then when the guy died, I was shocked. I already mentioned that. Hold on a second. I thought Katrina acted the boosh out of that scene. She had me freaking out. And I knew what, at least I believed I knew what I thought was coming. And she still freaked me out. The song to me made it worse. I didn't hate the song. I didn't hate its use, but having the song made at least my experience of that first watching worse than it would have been just watching something bad happening. It was worse to follow, harder to follow, worse because here they are full of hope and starting out on their own to carve something out for themselves in the land that will become Rihanna's. And then this happens. Oh my gosh. I think it was a brave choice because like you said, I can see it being polarizing. I'm very curious to see what people say about it, but I didn't hate it. And I went a step further and said, it's not just the song, the time period, the style, whatever, the juxtaposition, all of that, but it was sung by an African-American. I mean, how many points can you make? You know,
but think about this. We're in the age of streaming. We're in the age of DVRs. We're in the age of I can rewind live television. Could you imagine if you were not of this era and you were trying to watch this and you don't have the ability to rewind it and watch it again? You get one shot and then you have to wait till it comes out on video or is shown in reruns later in the season.
Yeah, the first watch, it was later at night. I was too tired. I wanted to get through it, not because I didn't like it, but because it was getting late. And I was fascinated by it, but I did not stop it, pause it, rewind, fast forward anything. I watched it as it was shown, as it was meant to be watched. I did not do it without sound or slow it down or rewind or anything like that until my second or third watches. But yeah, the first time, oh gosh. And no, I couldn't imagine not being able to do that. Oh, dude. So that's the end of the episode, of the television episode. So some of the important things I think that happened here were they set up the new conflict, of course. We had to have conflict. The first 90% of the episode or so was too much like Lallybroch. It was too happy, too sweet. We get Rollo. We get young Ian. We get a coming baby. Of course, yes, Ian had PTSD and that's awful, but he's with his family and he has a new friend. He's going through it with support. It's still copacetic as far as the group is concerned. Now enter, of course, the violent attack by Bonnet and his gang. There had to be something to start the conflict of the season. Now, what does this mean? How did Bonnet know they had all these gems? Well, we've already talked about that. So now Jamie and Claire and co are destitute again, starting off together with nothing but themselves and their family. We are also introduced in this episode to a new villain, Bonnet. Like BJR, he can be suave when he wants to be. He totally kissed the asses of Jamie and Claire and co when he needed something from them. But to be fair, he also warned them. The show introduced him, I think, perfectly. This episode was so much like the books. This is just from a book fan speaking, that it was completely satisfying in that. Now, Summer, I think we already kind of hinted at this or talked about this. What did you think of Ed Spieler's depiction of Bonnet?
I mean, I hate him, so he's doing a good job.
So that's great. Okay, good. I think he's doing great so far as well. But I was still so shocked at the ease with which he offed Leslie. I was like, because that doesn't happen in the book. And so it was like, it was a surprise. Something else that happened, this is connected to Leslie being killed. Something else that happened in this episode was the potential for new opportunities. The guy who was offed in the boat, that was not in the books, but I appreciate it. It gives us an opening for maybe a Murtaugh. There is now officially no Dungan Innes type figure or character. Both dudes from Edinburgh have left the building. What do you think, Sam?
You'd give it time. Just because he wasn't there since the beginning, Dungan Innes has the possibility of still showing up.
Okay, so there may still be a Dungan.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure and clearly don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure I heard them say that he was not replacing Dungan Innes.
Okay. I could be completely wrong in that. I just think it's interesting that by getting rid of him.
Well, but think about it. If If they needed to have one person with them on the boat and they wanted to up the stakes by having him offed, they couldn't put Duncan Innes with them on the boat.
That's true.
So they would have to add him as a character that they come up, that they come into contact with again later. But they couldn't have him on the boat because the only people that survived that evening are, you know, kith and kin.
Well, that's all I got. That was a pretty, that was a pretty rocking episode, girl. Gracious.
It was started off with a hang.
It did. A hanging in Edenton, right?
All right. So that was our discussion of episode 401. Join us next week when we will be discussing episode 402 entitled Do No Harm.
So as always, we thank you for listening and we would love, especially now that the TV show is underway. No, I did not say underwear. Underway. We would love for you to join us in our Facebook community to continue the conversation. There is always so much to talk about. You can find our community at outlanderpod.com/group. Dear listeners, thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Can't wait for 402. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.